All right, guys, we're back at Ringside Ramblings. We haven't done an interview in a while. And to be honest with you, I haven't done a Ringside Ramblings show in a while. But I've been watching this guy. I got to see this guy in person at a Rage wrestling event. You guys know I do the camera work for Rage. And I'm a tag team guy. And this guy came in with his tag team, the Heat Seekers, the four-time NWA World Tag Team Champions, multiple tag team championships across the United States. I mean, and I was really impressed. Their match with Geordie Bulldogs at Rage Wrestling was great. And also this guy, you know, we lost a true legend in the wrestling world not too long ago, and beautiful Bobby Eaton. And this guy, I was watching after Mr. Eaton passed away, watching this guy's Facebook post, and man, you could tell that him and Mr. Eaton were really close. And, you know, what can you say about beautiful Bobby Eaton? One of the classiest acts, one of the most talented wrestlers out there, and could make a tag team match gold. I mean, you know, whoever he was with, whether it's Arn Anderson, Stan Lane, Dennis Condrey, you know, he made it work. And with me tonight is Mr. Matt Sigmund from the Heat Seekers. Welcome to the show, sir. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Stevie. I'm doing good. Just grinding through, catching up after Thanksgiving and getting ready to get back in the swing of things on the road. So just making it day by day. Yeah. How are you?
Did you guys do WrestleCade this year?
No, you know, we didn't. We were originally supposed to be at two events last week, one in South Carolina and then one in Tennessee. And we had cancellations happen kind of last minute. And so we missed out on WrestleCade. And it was the first WrestleCade we weren't at in like 6 years, something like that. So I hate we missed a good time. But they looked like they did some pretty good business down there. I saw, you know, 10,000 plus people. And looks like all the wrestlers were having a great time. People were making money. And the fans were having a good time and seeing a bunch of great wrestling action as well. So looks like they had fun.
Yeah, it looked like they had a great time down there. Now, you grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. When did you become a wrestling fan? You were born in 87, so I'm a little bit older than you. So, but when did you become a wrestling fan?
You know, when I was really young kid, and still, I was hooked on superheroes. And, you know, so Batman, Spider-Man, that kind of thing, you know, was my jam. And around 6 years old, I guess, five or six, maybe, you know, somewhere along them, I saw wrestling for the first time. And I'm like, oh, my God, these guys are real life superheroes. This is good guy versus bad guy and athletic competition, you know, storytelling. I was hooked, and just impressive feats of power and strength and agility. And I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in the world. And I guess since then, you know, I've been hooked. You know, I told you before we started recording, I started watching like, you know, NWA mainly and WCW. Locally, it was Smoky Mountain Wrestling stuff that I got hooked on, but more so of actual psychological pro wrestling rather than WWF at the time, which was mainly character based and a little more entertainment. And, I do think there's a good mix of that, but what hooked me was the athletic side of stuff. So I was mainly Crockett stuff and Continental and Smoky Mountain and things like that. So that's tag team wrestling, especially is fun too, but it's nothing beats it, man.
Who were some of your favorites growing up?
Sting was pretty much all-time favorite just because, I mean, at the time, especially, he was full of charisma, but he looked like an athlete. He treated it like a legitimate business, and he hooked me. But you know, then guys like Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, William Regal, Dean Malenko, Bobby Eaton, and then tag teams, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, Heavenly Bodies, Road Warriors, Midnight, the guys that made it look like they were really in the fight of their life, and everything meant something. So those were kind of my heroes and idols growing up, and it's not changed much.
And you know, it's funny, we, you know, I my opinion, I've got tons and tons of old DVDs of Crockett stuff, and you know, and no offense to the guys that are working WWE right now, but I'd a whole lot rather pop in four hours of WCW Pro or WCW World or NWA Worldwide with Crockett than what I'm seeing today. I mean, Crockett back, and especially in 86, and I know you weren't around in 86, but 86, that place was on fire. I mean, you had the Four Horsemen, you had Dusty, you had Nikita, you had the Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express. It was just great. When you watched all this stuff, now, when did you decide, and what made you decide to become a pro wrestler?
That was a pretty young age as well. It's more so like a dream, you know, just wanting to be like my heroes. And, you know, I go to all the shows that I had access to at the time, whether they came to Knoxville or Johnson City, places like that. And just seeing it, you sit there and you're like, oh my God, this could be a reality someday if I really applied myself to do it. And I set that goal pretty early. And then come high school, it was like, I was finishing up high school, about to go to college. And I thought, you know, I might want to test the waters here. And so that's kind of when I pulled the trigger on it. But it started really, really early. I thought, if I can't really be a superhero, I might could do this.
Closest thing to it.
Yeah, closest thing.
How was it that first day of training?
So I was a senior in high school, and I was looking around at training options. And I saw a documentary on, oh God, it might have been Discovery Channel or TLC. It was one of those channels at the time. And they had profiled Chaotic Wrestling up in Boston, Massachusetts. And it looked like a good option. So I called them to see if I could come up for just, you know, a week and just to test the waters of wrestling, just to see if it's something I could do. Killer Kowalski was running the school at the time. Well, had, you know, hand involved. And there was a lot of solid talent up there. So I went up there for a week, got beat up, taught a little bit, and then came home bruised and banged up. And I loved it. And I found Dr. Tom Pritchard, who had just at the time left WWE as head trainer. And he opened up a school here in Tennessee. This was in 2005. And so I joined with Tom, and we linked up for about 8 months, I guess, three to four days a week in this tiny sweat box of a building. And we grinded it out, just kind of learning the ropes. And then from there, I just kind of hit the road with Tracy Smothers and Rock and Roll Express and Bobby Eaton and guys like that. I was really fortunate to link up with early on, and haven't stopped. That's been, I guess, 16, 17 years now. Time flies, man. It's wild.
That's quite a group to be able to hook up with. I mean, you just named, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, late great Tracy Smothers, who was part of the Southern Boys, and Bobby Eaton. I mean, we already talked about Bobby Eaton there, but what was your first match?
First match, I had come back from Boston. And after that week of training, I thought, well, I've got this. Nothing more to learn here. And I got booked in Kentucky, in Harlan, Kentucky, at the very beginning of 2005 against a guy named Ryan Dukey. And he was very, very, very green at the time, too. And so we went out. We had a terrible, terrible, terrible match. Beat the hell out of each other. But we thought it was great. We thought it was amazing. And, you know, looking back on it now, it's like, oh, my God, what were we thinking? But everybody starts somewhere. Thankfully, it was right after that that I linked up with Dr. Tom and was able to learn a thing or two about when and where to do what. So, but, yeah, first match was in January 2005 in Kentucky. And rough times.
How many states have you actually wrestled in? I mean, is there many states you haven't wrestled in?
I've wrestled in the majority of the United States. I have not wrestled in Alaska, maybe Maine, Washington. There's only a handful that I haven't wrestled in over the years. Because when I first started, the cool thing about it was, especially different compared to today, we were wrestling Tuesday night through Sunday night because the indies were just so prevalent at the time. You know, there wasn't the network, there wasn't Facebook and even MySpace at the time, really, and entertainment options were limited. And so, you know, promotions were running weekly towns. They were running throughout the week, not just on Saturday nights or Friday nights, whatever. And so I was able to do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday were mainly Tennessee shows based kind of around Knoxville or within an hour. And then Friday night, we did TV in Nashville. Saturdays, I was up in Kentucky or down in the Carolinas somewhere. And then every Sunday, we did Warner Robins, Georgia for years. And this was all while mixing in college and everything. So I didn't sleep for many years. But it was really cool because we got to do night in and night out for years with like I was saying, with Rock and Roll and Smothers and guys like that. And the learning experience of that alone was just amazing. And guys today, there's pros and cons. People are taking better care of themselves health-wise today, taking, less risks. And overall, your body's holding up more. But, you know, back then, the learning experience and the value of that is irreplaceable, man. And guys today do not have that experience. They're doing two or three shows a month, maybe on average. And it takes a lot longer to actually learn to work. But I'm blessed, man. I can't complain.
Yeah, you like I said, that group you were with, that's quite a group. That Ricky Morton, I was reading a quote from Ricky Morton, said, "You guys, the Heat Seekers, are one of the best tag teams he's ever been in the ring with, period." I mean, when you think about the tag teams Ricky Morton's faced up against, I mean, the legendary feud with Midnight Express, just to name one there, that's the big feud with the Rock and Roll Express. But to be in that same category as the Midnight Express, that's quite an honor for you. So winning your first title, I know it was a singles title. I think that's right. What was it like when you found out you were going to win your first title?
You know, and I can't quite remember what title that might have been. I'm sure it's one of the ones here at one of the Tennessee promotions. But, you know, it's really cool, especially at the time it's your first. You're just a year or so in or two. And it's something different. And you know that whoever you're working for at the time has put some faith in you a little bit, at least. And it's just a cool experience to do that and be able to represent whatever company it may be that you're working for and just have that established part of a career to kick things off. So it was always cool. You know, I always got kind of excited about the opportunity to do something like that. And then to be able to take it and expand upon it and tell stories and draw money. That's always the way we look at it.
Yeah, definitely. I remember I did an interview a few years ago with one of the Headbangers, and to hear him tell the story about when they told them they were going to win the titles, the tag titles at WrestleMania. Yeah, I mean, you could still hear it in his voice, like it was that day. And he was like, "You can't imagine the feeling. We're going to go out the biggest stage in the business, and we're going to win the tag titles for the first time." I mean, you know, it just gave you goosebumps to think about
it. Yeah, that's a huge.
That's huge. I know I'll probably already know the answer to this. You rather do a tag team or you rather do singles?
Tag team, man. I've done tag team the majority of my career, and you know, it's what truly hooked me in wrestling. And I think match wise, storytelling wise, and what you're able to pull out of a tag team match is totally different than anything else in the world. And I love the environment we can establish with it, and longevity. You know, I think our bodies take a little less of a beating. Yeah. And so it's given me the gift of longevity just a little bit more than I would have as a singles wrestler for the most part. So I'm very rarely will do some singles matches from time to time if story calls for it, or if, you know, special circumstance here and there. But majority of my career has always been tag team wrestling, especially with the Heat Seekers. I've been doing it with Elliot for 9 years now. So,
yeah. All right. Heel, would you rather do heel or baby face?
Heel, man. Just look at me. I'm an ugly dude. No, you know, I do prefer being a heel wherever we go, simply because I feel like I'm at the point where I'm good at directing traffic in the ring. And heel's job should be, it's not always, but it should be, you know, their job to kind of set the pace of the match and kind of direct traffic and see where things are going and call it. So I like having that little bit of control, and I'm good at what I do. So that's my preferred spot. Occasionally we're heels at places for long enough where we have to switch it up, and that's fine too. We try to make the most of whatever position we're in. I'm not opposed to anything really, as long as it makes sense in the long run. And as long as it's going to provide for my family, then I'm good.
Right. You had another tag team before the Heat Seekers, Diamonds in the Rough. You guys got to wrestle the New Age Outlaws. What was it like getting into, that's another great tag team. What was it like wrestling Billy Gunn and Jesse James?
Yeah, so you know, before I tagged with Elliot, I started traveling a lot with David Young. And we were wrestling each other a lot, night in and night out. He had Elix Skipper, who he used to tag with doing the Diamonds in the Rough gimmick, had quit the business. He had left wrestling altogether. And we were traveling, wrestling each other every night. Then we decided to start doing the tag. And we did it for about 3 years. And David was an amazing person in the ring because he was a bigger dude, but he could go. Like, he could flat out work really, really hard. And you can go watch some of his amazing matches with like AJ Styles and guys like that, and they deliver every night. But it was always a learning experience with David, and there were several really good matches that we were able to be involved in. New Age Outlaws and Too Cool, and just random teams like that in rock and roll. We wrestled Rock and Roll Express a lot with David too, but it's always a fun experience. New Age Outlaws was fun. I love Billy Gunn. He's a great guy. The whole Armstrong family are wonderful people. Wonderful people who have who've been really kind to me over the years when we've had interactions. And Brad Armstrong was a friend of mine, and Brian is an amazing person, amazing wrestler. Lots of fun to be around. Laugh your ass off all the time. And it's a fun experience, man. And as a little kid, you know, growing up at the height of pro wrestling for me when I was a teenager, you know, New Age Outlaws were the team on top, you know, WWF TV.
Yeah.
And that was a cool moment for me too. But yeah, I've been blessed to have a lot of awesome ring experience with guys that I grew up watching. It's cool to sit there and just be like, I'm really in this situation. I'm in the ring with these guys. It's wild some days. Yeah. And then some days you're sitting there like, I don't want to be here. I want to go home.
I'll tell you this. You brought up Brad Armstrong, and we talk about Bobby Eaton. Yeah. People. Brad Armstrong is probably the most underrated wrestler I have ever seen. That guy could He was quick, and he probably threw the best drop kick I've ever seen. I remember when he came to Crockett, it was mid-'86, I think, and you see that guy with the curly hair and the glasses. He had those 80s glasses on, and I was like, this guy can freaking move. You know, and I think one of the drawbacks with Brad was if he had a good ability to do an interview and to do a mic, and he got better as time went on, there's no telling what that guy could have done. But, I mean, I'm sitting there watching. I think it was Super Brawl 1. You see him come out with the Young Pistols, and then they throw him to the back, and he comes out with a mask on. He's Fantasia. And I said, that's Brad Armstrong. I don't care. Nobody does moves like that for Brad Armstrong. But, you know just one of the most underrated wrestlers I've ever seen.
Brad was still doing independence right before he died. He was doing a lot of the Carolina shows with us. We were always wrestling down in the Carolinas for a promoter named Ricky Nelson. And Brad was still making towns, and he was going out there and doing 25-minute matches, 30-minute matches, and just still in amazing shape, ripped to shreds, six-pack, making everybody in the locker room look terrible, you know, physical shape-wise. And he'd go out there, and he's doing crossbodies off the top. He's doing drop kicks. He's doing his, he had these amazing headlock takeovers where he would jump up in the air and catch the guy and take over the headlock. And, Brad put on amazing matches in the 80s and 90s. I wish so bad that we could have seen Brad mixing it up with talent in this day and age, just with current guys. Brad and Tommaso Ciampa, or Brad and Adam Cole, or Brad and even Omega. Oh my God, Kenny Omega. Oh, yeah. Whether you like him or whatever, and Brad Armstrong could have been big money. But totally miss him. And he was a funny guy too. Great in the locker room.
Yeah, I just remember one of the matches I remember that really struck me out with Brad. I think it was him and Barry Windham at one of the Clash champions, right after Windham and went heel. And he, as big as Windham was, because, you know, they favored the big guys back then, and Brad was undersized with him. But I think Brad went to a time limit draw with him. And then he had a great match with Mike Rotunda at one of the Clashes. But the Crockett Cup, when he teamed with Bullet Bob, with his dad, and they made that run, upset the Russians, and got far in the Crockett Cup. Man, you know, you really miss Brad Armstrong. That guy was something else. I was a big Brad Armstrong fan. Let's go. And I got to go ahead.
I was just going to say, a lot of guys today could really learn a lot by going back on YouTube or network or however they have to do it, and go back and watch Brad and kind of study those tapes, because there's so much to learn from watching his movements and timing and stuff. So
the guy, and I'll tell you another thing that just hit me, the Russian leg sweep, the way he could put that Russian leg sweep on and just out of the blue, you didn't even see it coming. And he did it so quick and rolled right over for the pin. I was like, this guy's, you know, just never caught on. I hate it. I know he had that run with the light heavyweight championship and that feud with Pillman, where he kind of went, you know, he kind of got a little bit better on the mic. I did enjoy that part with Brad Armstrong. Talking about another small guy that really caught on, what's it like getting in the ring with Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson?
Oh, man. You know, outside of the Midnight Express, Elliot and I have had more tag matches with Rock and Roll Express than any other team in the past 20 years. We've been very fortunate to lock up with Ricky and Robert countless times at this point. And, you know, the more we do it, the more confident I become as a wrestler overall, and especially as a tag team wrestler. It's always a learning environment for us, and they have taught us so much. They have given us more than I can ever thank them for or repay. And it's always fun because they understand wrestling. It doesn't matter what style somebody really enjoys or what the promotion is trying to go for, whatever. They can connect with any audience that they get in front of. And you can see it today with watching Ricky. Ricky will go, to a lot of places, local independents or whatever, and people still bite on. But then he can go to places like the GCW and whatever today and still, you know, he hooks people from all over the world. And it's because he knows what he's doing and he knows how to work in any kind of environment. And we've learned a lot over the years just by doing business with them. And we've had some really cool moments with them as well. One of my favorites, was the last Cornette brought back out the Smoky Mountain Tag titles 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And so we got to do a Smoky Mountain Tag title match with Rock and Roll and Freedom Hall in Johnson City with Cornette in our corner. And that, I mean, I used to watch Rock and Roll at Freedom Hall when I was a kid. And so this was just, it's like, oh my God. But yeah, so grateful for all their help over the years and just teaching us right from wrong and how not to be stupid all the time. We still are stupid from time to time, but Ricky, especially it just watching him is like artwork.
He's one of the, if not the best seller of all time. I mean, I can remember, I think it was when they lost the tag titles to Rude and Raging Bull. And when he had the arm injury, he was from Sharkade. And I felt bad for the guy. I was like, they're going to rip his arm off. I mean, go ahead, just get it over with. They're going to rip his arm off. That guy could freaking sell. And to do the things that they do at the age they are, Ricky Morton, when he comes up with new moves, like what was it, the Canadian Destroyer he did a couple years ago at over 60 years old. I mean, this guy is still doing stuff.
It's wild, man.
I don't know how he does it, but I mean, the guy is like, he's got the fountain of youth, I guess, because I think he's what, 65 years old now?
He's up there in the age, but man, he somehow magically, his body still keeps going and he's still able to keep up with these guys. And it's wild. Robert too. Robert's an amazing mind for the business and has done so much. And just watching them together and just what they're able to make happen each night in and night out is crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, you would think that Father Time would have caught up with them because, I mean, you look at Morton. Morton took a beating back in the 80s. I mean, the Horsemen in 86 alone, I don't know how Morton was leaving parts of his body everywhere at different places. Dorton Arena's got a piece of his face. I think they've got a piece of his nose in Greensboro. But I mean, and it just doesn't look like it's phased him. He's just in great shape. So
they're going to go 100. Yeah. They're going to go, till they can't absolutely no more. They will. And that's amazing. I think, cause I look at family members and friends of mine that are their age and they can't do much at all. It's wild how that wrestler mentality can push you to the limit or past normal limits of human ability.
I heard him say not too long ago, in the last couple of weeks, I think he was on Tony Schiavone's podcast. I heard him say, people ask me when I'm going to retire, and it's when I can't give you your money's worth is when I'll stop. He said, and that hasn't happened yet so far that I know. So, you gotta love the Rock and Roll Express. All right, let's talk about the Heat Seekers. How did you and Elliot Russell end up tagging together? How did that come about?
I quit tagging with David Young when his injuries started piling up. His knees and back were killing him, giving out, whatever. So he pulled out of the business for a while. And I started doing some singles wrestling. I started doing some training of young guys, and Elliot was one of the young guys that I was training. So he was with me for a little while, just doing the training thing. And then I sent him over to kind of finish up and clean up and learn a little bit more from Dr. Tom. And then Elliot started traveling with me, and it got to the point we were wrestling each other night in, night out, all over the country. We were doing TV down in Arkansas for TCW wrestling, and then we were going out doing Canada tours and all across the states here on the East Coast and stuff. And I looked at him, I was like, why are we doing it? Why can't we just, because we had the same mentality about the business for the most part. And I was like, you know, you got the big size and you can be the power guy of the team. And I'm the smaller guy that can do a little bit more of the groundwork. And why don't we just mix this up? And I had done a Heat Seekers tag in the past too. So I had already been kind of using the name here and there. But I was like, why don't we do the Heat Seekers deal? And now we've been going 9 years. We haven't stopped. And that's been the ticket for us, Heat Seekers over the years. We've grown it into something that's been really, really cool. And we've got a lot more opportunity on the horizon. Sky's the limit. So I'm excited to see kind of how far we can push this.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the NWA World Tag Team titles. I mean, it's got such a rich history. Like we talked about the Rock and Roll Express, Midnights, the Road Warriors, among the Hollywood Blondes, among others. Talk a little bit about winning that for the first time. What was it like when you guys won the NWA World Tag Team titles for the first time?
That was really cool. We had the NWA US tag titles at the time. And we were kind of mixing it up more with the NWA. And I saw opportunity to do something cool because they didn't really have a crazy strong direction for the tag titles at the moment. Lance Hoyt and Harry Smith had them, but they were kind of spending more time in Japan and not really doing stuff with NWA. And so I pitched the idea. I was like, you know, can we maybe make this happen, or at least a match happen to where we can put some attention on the belts? And we ended up lining it up and we did the title switch here in Tennessee. And that was really cool because, you know, growing up, I was such a big fan of Midnight Express specifically, yeah, that having those belts meant something to me. And I thought it was a really awesome moment to get that. And that, you know, we've had them four times over the years, and it's cool because the NWA, and we haven't wrestled for the NWA in a couple of years. So I, you know, I don't really know Billy Corgan all that well, but NWA has always been looked at as tradition and professionalism and taken the wrestling business serious as athletes and competition. And that was something I always respected. And you know, we were able to do a good little bit. I wish we could have done more, and you know, down the line we might end up doing more with NWA, but we had a lot of fun with what we were able to do with them and take them around and defend them, because we were defending them all over the place. You know, and that opened the door to go to Japan and stuff too. So I'm very grateful for the time we were able to work with NWA and carry those titles.
Yeah, that brings another question. You just brought it up. What was it like going to Japan and wrestling?
You know, grew up watching a lot of Japanese wrestling, All Japan, New Japan, some Zero One, and Noah. And it was always, for me, it was always one of those top five bucket list things in wrestling to do. And after we had the NWA belts, you know, doors of opportunity opened up for us over there. And the first trip, I was so nervous, not really knowing what we were getting into and dipping our toes in the water. I love it there. I absolutely, I love the culture. I love all the people. I love the business over there and the way they treat wrestling and wrestlers. And the food is amazing. And it's a different world over there. And, you know, the wrestlers over there that we've been able to lock up with have been, you know, fantastic to wrestle and learn from and elevate our knowledge and ability. And every trip over there is fun and something different. So that's been really cool too. You know, we've done, I don't know, we've gone 5 times, 6 times, something like that. And Lord willing, hopefully once borders and all the craziness in the world eases up a little bit, we'll be going back to do more business. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, hopefully. And one of your opponents over in Japan on one of your tours, Rick Steiner, part of the legendary, one of my favorite tag teams, the Steiner brothers. I can't imagine. Did you ever catch a Steiner line from Rick Steiner? I can't imagine what that could have felt like.
I have a few times. We've been fortunate to work, and I need to start mentioning them more, I guess, because, you know, Midnight, Rock and Roll, and Road Wars and stuff have always been good to us. But we've worked with the Steiner brothers a lot. And the opportunity for one of the Japan tours came to do a match with Rick. And then his partner over there was Kazushi Miyamoto at the time. Big, solid wrestler over there who's done some good business. And that was actually, I think that's Rick's last match. I think we retired Rick. That was in Tokyo. And I think that's Rick's last match that he's done. And I do not foresee him having any more wrestling matches after that one. So that was really cool. And if I got to be a part of Rick Steiner's last match, and it's in Tokyo of all places, I mean, I'm as a kid, man, what in the world? What is life anymore, Stevie? Like, what's going on? Rick is awesome. I don't know how it was. It would have been a different world for me and Elliot to wrestle them in the 80s and 90s. But us wrestling him, the times we have, when we have been so easy and nothing but fun. And it's always a good time. And Rick is like a giant little kid in the locker room and just laughing and cutting up and pulling ribs and just fun stuff. So, but that was a cool moment, man. That's one of my book, I think. So
I can't imagine. They were so great, especially when they first started, and when Scott would come up with these new moves, like everybody, you know, nobody, I mean, you've seen the victory roll before, but nobody had seen anything like the Frankensteiner. And then he did the tilt-a-whirl, and then the bulldog off the top rope and stuff like that. You know, they were coming up with stuff everywhere. It was one of the Wrestle Wars. They fought a team from Japan. And I'm telling you, there was a young kid, young Japanese kid, and the names escape me right now. But I honestly thought they were going to kill that guy. That guy took a beating. I don't know if you remember seeing that match, but he really looked like he was out of it. I know he had to have a concussion after that, but they pounded him.
Yeah, so a lot of those guys back in the day, man, they were pretty rough with each other. And Rick and Scott, they would throw guys around pretty rough, pretty hard. And there was some wild moves. I know that, you know, they did that top rope DDT, and guys would just be planted like right off. Just, I don't know how they didn't kill a bunch of guys. And, but yeah, and at the time though, who's going to tell them no? Or who's going to say
exactly? And nobody was going to say, no, you're not doing that. Good Lord.
Scotty's bigger than my car outside. who's going to be the guy to be like, I don't think so.
And you know, I remember watching him when he first came in. And they were just brought him in. All he wore was the yellow trunks. And he was not that big. I mean, he was cut, but he wasn't that big. And could that guy move around the ring? That guy could fly around the ring too. And I was like, this is going to be something special here. And, you know, history shows Steiner was one of the great tag teams in WCW. Talk a little bit about your rivalry. It was a Rage Wrestling tag team, and you guys had a rivalry with them. Actually, the guys that you fought at the Rage Wrestling event, the Geordie Bulldogs, What's it like with the Geordie Bulldogs?
Oh, man. I think they're a thorn in our side from now until the day I die. We're actually wrestling them next weekend, too, at RWA in North Carolina. So that's something that we've always we've always connected well with those guys. And they're just fun to beat up, to be quite honest. it always delivers. We had a lot of matches with them at AML Wrestling, and they always bring it, and they're not afraid to step up and deliver on their end. And it's the same on our side. And Mark and Sean, they're great guys, and they love professional wrestling.
Definitely.
And it's always just a kind of a fun time to be around them. And we get to tell some cool stories as well. And I'm looking forward to locking up with them next week. We're in a cage next week. And I think I'm going to beat the hell out of Mark Denny.
I figured everybody was going to go after Sean. Denny always
Sean's always got that, the mist he sprays in guys' faces. And there's been so many nights. I used to live in Orlando, Florida for a while. So we would do these matches in the Carolinas. And, sometimes we're at these buildings that don't have showers or whatever. And Sean would spray me with this mist. And then I'd be beat the hell up anyway from the drives and whatnot. But I'd be driving back to Florida from North Carolina, and I'd stop in like a Pilot travel station, and my face would still be like green or blue or red. And I'm like limping and I'm bruised up, and the attendants there would always be like, "What the hell happened to you? Did we need to call somebody?" Or, so it's always a fun time.
Another legend you guys got to wrestle with, and anybody that watched NWA wrestling back in the 80s knows who I'm talking about, George South. What's it like wrestling with George South?
George was our corner man, our manager, confidant for years at AML Wrestling, a few other places. And, you talk about, we were talking about matches earlier with Brad Armstrong, right before he died, him and George were still going out wrestling each other a lot and just absolutely tearing it up. George is one of the best people to have in a locker room. He's one of the best wrestlers, in my opinion, of all time, because he delivers night in and night out. He always gives 110%, and he truly cares about the business. And one of the most passionate people I've ever met in my entire life. And I'm very thankful for George. And he's also one of the guys. He's also one of the few guys who you'll be driving home on a Sunday or Monday, whatever, and it might be 3 a.m. and your phone rings or you get a text message and it's George South checking on you. He's just a good guy. He's just one of the best. And there's nobody like him. And I love watching George wrestle. One of my favorite memories from right before things shut down, we did a loop of West Virginia. We did, I think, three or four shows, and George was wrestling every night. And we'd do our match, and then I was sure to go sit by the curtain and watch George every night, because you're always going to learn something. And he gets people so mad. And then he can go 20 minutes later and preach about Jesus after he's got these people want to absolutely murder him. It's wild how he can get the people right in the palm of his hand. So he's always good to watch.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories is the story about when Flair got mad at Dusty one night going into the TV tapings, and he was supposed to fight George, and he told George, he said, "You're gonna go with me tonight." And then he was like, "What are you talking about?" And he ends up putting on a great match, and it goes long, and Dusty's off to the side going, "What are you doing?" And George South is taking Ric Flair to town. And, watching it back then as a kid, you were like, wait a minute, this guy's getting beat up every week. I mean, just getting beat every week, and he's carrying Flair to the limit right now. But, you know, that's one of my favorite stories to hear about George South. And like you said, a few times I've been around him, just a great guy. You know, I really enjoyed getting to meet George South at some of the Rage events. Just a great guy. You talked a little bit about before they shut down. Now, how has this whole COVID deal affected you guys? I know it's cut down a lot of your shows. How hard has it been on you guys?
You know, that West Virginia loop that I was just talking about, it was us and George, Bobby Eaton, traveled the loop with us. And that was the last time I got to really hang out with Bobby. Then everything just shut down. Like the next week, we were booked to go wrestle or work SmackDown in Chicago. And they called Monday or Tuesday, I think it was. They're like, hey, don't show up Friday because we're not doing TV there anymore. And so I was like, all right. And I didn't think things would be as bad as it got. But, you know, our schedule, we had 6 weeks off. And then we were back on the road because, you know, some of these places here in Tennessee and whatnot started running. Whether that was the right move or the wrong move at the time, I don't know. But I had to pay bills. So
exactly.
We got back on the road. And some guys went 9 months to a year without wrestling. And that, you know, that cuts out money to put food on and people's tables and pay bills. I know guys that were struggling for a very, very long time that relied, you know, on 100% on this business. And thankfully, we were able to get back kind of out in the mix and earn some money compared to most relatively quick. But it cut off our ability to go do our Canada tours that I do once or twice a year normally. And Japan, it stopped that. So yeah, we were limited and have been limited to where we are able to work and what we're able to do. And things are starting to balance back out a little bit normal. You know, there's these new rules and restrictions in certain towns and counties and states, depending on where you go and whatever, to each their own. We follow whatever guidelines need to be necessary to make our money. But it's rough, and we had it better than a lot of people, but, you know, I'm hoping, and I could be wrong, but I'm hoping things, you know, continue to slowly improve to where we can get back full force. You know, it's good to see, whether you like the product or not, it's good to see WWE back out on the road and doing house shows and TV. And it's great to see AEW running, you know, big arenas again and seeing people get out and enjoy wrestling, and independents are thriving. You know, 10,000 plus people finally able to get back after a year that they took off. And it's good to see wrestlers at a point where they're able to make money again. Yeah.
Definitely. All right. You talked a little bit about him just a few minutes ago. Talk about Beautiful Bobby. I mean, I can remember I remember hating the guy so bad. And I mean, I can remember back when Facebook first come along, and I don't know if it was really Tully Blanchard or not. I got a friend request from Tully Blanchard, accepted my friend request. And I sent him a message. Thank you so much, sir, for all the memories. I absolutely hated your guts back then. And he was like, his response was, well, that means I did my job. And Beautiful Bobby, though, I can remember seeing this guy for the first time, and I think they attacked Morton in the ring it was 11:30 WCW Pro or NWA Pro show. They attacked Morton. I was like, who is this guy? And then to see him wrestle after that, the guy flew all over the ring. And one of my favorite memories about Bobby Eaton is not even a tag team memory, but Wrestle War, the TV title match against Arn Anderson, where he won the TV belt. And you see the look on his face when he – I mean, whether it was an act or not, but the look on his face, like, I've done this on my own. I'm not with the Midnight Express. I did it on my own. And he went and hugged the referee and all this stuff. And I was like, you got to be really happy for that guy. But everything I hear about from you, from other people, just Bobby Eaton was such a great guy. What's some of your best memories of Bobby Eaton?
You know, I met Bobby the year I started wrestling. I met Bobby. He was doing weekly shows with us in Alcoa, Tennessee. And at that point, there was several what we would consider name talent coming through the locker room at that time. And I was green. I was nobody. I barely even belonged in that locker room. And Bobby was the first name / legend, whatever you want to call him, to actually come up, talk to me, ask me questions, and truly be curious about me and my life and family and goals. And I mean, just, talked to me like he knew me for 30 years. And we developed a pretty good friendship, wrestling each other from time to time then and hitting the road and traveling with each other. And just over the years, we became closer and closer. And man, what a guy. He, in my opinion, he wasn't much of a talker, right? But just in my opinion, best wrestler of all time, bar none, for me. And that's flavors of ice cream. I like Rocky Road. Yeah. You like chocolate. But there was nobody who truly, I don't think, cared about professional wrestling as Bobby. It's on his brain 24/7. He would make anybody he got in the ring with look like $1 million. And he could flat out put together matches. And he was like me. He loved tag team wrestling. And, he liked being in that spot to kind of guide. He was a good train conductor and laying stuff out. But, man, he was so many amazing matches over the years and working so hard and just such a nice guy in the locker room. Give you the – I've seen him – they say this about so many people. I've seen Bobby Eaton legitimately give somebody his shirt off his back. And it's like, what in the world? Where you're the one nice guy truly in wrestling. And so thankful. And we did. We had a really good friendship over the years. And especially the last 5 years or so, he had stopped wrestling, but he was doing like agent work on some shows, or he'd manage me and Elliot a lot from time to time. We'd drag him on the road with us and he'd do the managing spot for us. Or we'd do some sort of angle with him if it was a small show where he ended up punching us at the end of the night, just because he had that beautiful, beautiful right hand. And so even when it got to the point he couldn't do too much, we still got him in the mix. And man, just, he ate it up, we ate it up, crowd ate it up every night. It was great. But I love Bobby. And I felt like Bobby is one of those guys that always got overlooked and underrated in a massive way. Put together a show for Bobby in 2019, right before everything shut down. We ran an event here in Knoxville where we called it Beautiful Bobby Eaton Appreciation. But Don't Tell Bobby was the gimmick behind it. And, he didn't have internet. He didn't do Facebook or any of that stuff. So he had absolutely legitimately no clue that it was going to be for him. And, he didn't fully understand until that night, I don't think. He didn't fully understand just how much he was loved and how many guys really appreciated him and really thought about him. And so that was a really cool moment for us. And that event turned into a really cool opportunity, because that was, not only was it the last, it was a really cool moment for Bobby, but that was the last time so many of these people got to get together and see each other for the last time. That was the last time Bobby saw a lot of people, maybe even Cornette. I think that was the last time they saw each other. And William Regal and Dave Taylor came, and then Bobby's having fun with them. But that's the last time we saw Tracy Smothers. That was the last event Smothers was around. And so it was nice to have everybody around for one night and for something cool and good. But, man, love Bobby, and I miss him so bad. I talked to him. And I missed it. And he would call me, but he'd leave a voicemail. So I saved that voicemail, man. It's hard to go back and listen to. But
I remember when you put that voicemail on social media, and I heard that, and I was like, man, you know, what can you say about that guy? That's just awesome there.
I had a really rough time when he passed. I'm better about it now because, you know, Bobby's health problems were up and down for a long time. But, man, he loved wrestling and people and family and everything right up till the day he died. Yeah. And he's just so funny and just a great guy and so helpful. And I'm very, very grateful for all the time I got to spend around and travel with him. Yeah. Just learn and laugh. God, we laugh a lot.
You know, I sat here when I was doing my research and I come up with, I told you we were going to talk about Bobby Eaton and trying to think of, you know, what I would consider my top Bobby Eaton matches. And I was like, there's so many of them. I mean, you know, the ones that stand out,
it's hard. Oh my God. It's hard, right?
It's terrible. I mean, the Great American Bash 90 with Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong, the Southern Boys.
Yeah.
That was a great match. And then, you know, any of the Rock and Roll Express matches was a great match, but you know,
any of Rock and Roll,
and one that stood out the Tracy Smothers that I love watching was from one of the clashes, him and Stan Lane against Ric Flair and Barry Windham. I was like,
oh yeah,
oh my gosh, that was just awesome. But you know, there's so many. How do you pick a great Bobby Eaton match? Well, what you won't think is the greatest Bobby Eaton match.
And the, you know, it's hard because like you love watching Midnight against Rock and Roll, and the match you mentioned was Smothers and them. Smothers worked so hard that night. Smothers yeah. was on it that night too.
Yeah,
at the Clash. But you know, some of my favorite Bobby matches were on like random Saturday nights or random WCW pros and things like he's yeah. wrestling Brad Armstrong and they're just going 90 miles an hour on a Saturday morning wrestling show. And some of just the random matches he'd have, but like it's him and Arn Anderson was really hard to beat when it comes to just watching straight up good wrestling. And they had a lot you can find on YouTube or network or whatever from Saturday nights, you know, that they would put every few weeks. It felt like they were working each other for a while there. But the stuff he did with Regal when they did the short little Blue Bloods tag was funny. Bobby loved filming those vignettes and those promos. Those were always really fun too. And it's hard. It is Bobby and Flair singles matches are really good.
Two out of three files match.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was here in Knoxville.
Wow. Yeah. It was that Clash.
Those were amazing. So any, and that's another guy. I know we talked about Brad Armstrong earlier and how guys should go back and watch that. People should really go back and watch Bobby. He was always there for he would make people – I said he'd make people look good, but, like, once there was a hot tag and a baby face, whether it be Ricky Morton, Road Warriors, whoever, when that baby face comes in hot, Bobby's right there ready to go do take whatever, and he's feeding right for that baby face. Boom, 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 boom. And, man, just amazing wrestler, amazing person, nobody nicer. And I told Jerry Lynn that, you know, now that Bobby has passed, Jerry Lynn has to take up the mantle of being the nicest wrestler in professional wrestling. I told him, don't screw it up. So.
All right, let me ask you this. Favorite incarnation of the Midnight Express, Eaton and Lane or Eaton and Condrey?
Eaton and Condrey to me. Stan Lane's amazing as well. They were really good together. Eaton and Condrey. It's tough. It's tight.
It's tough.
I like them all together. Eaton and Condrey remind me more of me and Elliot.
Right.
I love Dennis Condrey too. Dennis is, especially since Bobby's passing, Dennis has been really, really good to me. And they clicked really, really well together. Yeah. And Stan did an amazing job filling that spot too. It's hard to pick between the two. They're both right up there.
What amazed me about the whole thing was when Dennis left, when Stan came in, they never missed a beat. I mean, I think he came in right before the Crockett Cup, and they went all the way to the semifinals and lost to Dusty and Nikita. I mean, but they never missed a beat, and I think that, you know, that had a lot to do with Bobby.
It had a lot to do with Bobby. I don't want to say you could put anybody in that spot, right? But Stan knew the assignment when he got in there, and they clicked very well together. And Bobby's, like I said, he's a good train conductor. He can get in there and make anybody look like $1 million, including his partners. And that happened. And they did amazing work together too. And they, you know, in some regards, they did even better than him and Dennis. But man, I gotta go with him and Dennis just because I think that's what hooked me first.
Yeah,
probably. You know,
that was the, like I said, the first night watching, what got me hooked on it was Rock and Roll Express on a Saturday night, 11:30 on WREL in Raleigh, and here comes the Midnight Express into Jeltham. Yeah. And you know, after that, you're like, who is this little geeky guy with the tennis racket out here? Who are these two guys? And over the years, you know, as much as I hated them over the years, when I was that age, I love them so much now. I could go back and watch. I've got like a 20-some disc DVD set of the Midnight Express, and I'll sit there and watch. And I'm like, these guys are amazing. I mean, these are freaking amazing. And just like with the Rock and Roll, they're amazing.
Cornette's always got new stuff that he's putting out that people haven't seen too. So, you know. I encourage everybody to always stay tuned to Cornette's collectible stuff because you never know what you're going to find out there. And I know some cool stuff he's got in the works too regarding Midnight. So keep your eyes posted on that.
I know I've kept you for a while now. We've been talking about an hour. I could talk all night about this stuff. I'll ask you some quick hitting questions, then I'll let you go. Or we'll talk about your other business too, and then I'll let you go. Toughest opponents you went up against?
Vordell Walker, bar none, hands down, toughest guy I've ever been in the ring with. He's a Louisiana guy. He is a powerhouse, and we have wrestled each other multiple times, but he always brings me and tests me to my limit, and the guy has more strength than anybody I've ever been in the ring with, and I don't think anybody can match it. At least that I've met.
Okay, is this somebody you think he could move to the next level, or is that somebody or is he still in the business?
He's still wrestling from time to time, not as active as he used to be. He got into firefighting, and those poor fires don't know what they had coming. he's amazing. You need to look up. There was a heated incident between him and Rick Steiner, and he got the better of Rick on it. And this was when Rick was still good shape. So I wouldn't mess with Vordell Walker on my best day.
I would definitely look that out. I wrote that down to look that up. Favorite match or matches, if there's one or two that you got that you've been in. Oh,
man, that is tough. It's going to be us and Rock and Roll, Elliot and me against Rock and Roll, because some of those nights, man, it's just the adrenaline's going. Ricky and Robert have the people just amazing right where they want them. And it's really hard to beat that. Outside of that, I've had some really fun, good singles matches with Chase Owens all over the world. We've wrestled each other all across the United States, Canada, China, and those are some of my favorite.
Okay, so talk a little bit about what you do, your other job. We'll talk about that. Now, you're a fitness trainer. You got your own business now?
Yeah, so I had it, and I opened an Anytime Fitness a couple years ago, built it up. I didn't even know the pandemic was coming, but we sold it right before the pandemic, thankfully. Because that brought on some challenges, I know, but the one we opened is still doing good, still going strong. It's built back up after the pandemic, and so awesome props to the guy that bought it. But I know that had to be a battle, but that was always a fun adventure of mine and a dream of mine, and I got to do it and build it up and make some money off of it. And now I do some work with a company called Noom. It's based out of New York, and we do virtual coaching through them. A really great company, helping people kind of lose weight and de-stress and get life back on track. So I'm excited about that. It works well with wrestling too, because I can take that job anywhere in the world, and it's a fun, great company to be a part of.
So you talked a little
bit. And I got some really cool stuff.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I got some really cool stuff in the works that we're working on with my buddy, Steve New. I don't know if you know Steve New or not, but an attorney out of West Virginia, Cornette's good friend and my good friend. And that's actually his shirt, New Law.
Okay.
He's working on some really cool stuff and helping wrestlers. He's got a sports agency he's building up. And, you know, one of the important things we've done over the years is trying to protect what we've built, especially with our Heat Seekers name and brand. And Steve, you know, he's gone above and beyond helping us and making sure, you know, we're getting trademarked and protected so we can keep control of this Heat Seeker brand we've been building over the years. And he's doing a really good job with that. And the sports agency thing is really cool. So, you know, any guys in wrestling that are looking to protect their stuff, I highly encourage reaching out to Steve and having that talk about what it would take to really lock stuff down. Cause there's a lot of times where stuff gets taken and there's nothing you can do about it. So,
yeah. I can imagine. So you talked a little bit about Facing the Bulldogs coming up. What other upcoming events have you guys got going on?
You know, we do a lot with PWX there in the Carolinas, a lot of events around Charlotte and Rock Hill, South Carolina. We do a lot of work with Innovate Wrestling here in Tennessee. We're kind of just all over the place, really. It's a lot of independents. ASW up in West Virginia, World Fighting Showcase runs events through Tennessee and Virginia, West Virginia, and then Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, whenever they're running in the Carolinas and things like that. Random independents all over the world, really. I'm hoping to get back up. Canadian Wrestling Elite, we do a lot of their tours up there. And then aiming to get back over in Japan here soon for Tokyo Championship Wrestling. It's a company that is ran by Jimmy Suzuki. And so excited about some of that stuff. Got a couple other cool things in the works too. I can't chat too much on yet, but
I got you.
Fingers crossed, and we're ready to go wherever.
Well, hopefully everything will start opening up, and you guys can start going like overseas and stuff like that, like you want to. Look, I'm not going to take up any more of your time. Like I said, we've been talking over an hour. I've enjoyed every minute of it. Like I said, old school wrestling fan. And when I heard you were so close with Bobby Eaton, I was like, you know, and I debated for a couple of months about even approaching you about this. And I said, you know, maybe now is a good time to approach him about it. But thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I could talk all night about wrestling, and good luck to you guys. Hope everything works out and you guys can get going again.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been a fun night, fun conversation. I love doing stuff like this. It gets me out of the normal wheelhouse that I'm always in, you know. It's just something different. And it's always fun to talk about rock and roll and Armstrongs and Bobby Eaton. You can't go wrong with a conversation on that. So expanding other people's knowledge. Anybody that's listening to this needs to go back out and checks out some of the old school work that these guys did and how they paved the way for this generation. So,
yeah, I mean, any of these young wrestlers coming up, you go back and watch the Crockett era and see how they did, not just the ring work, but the psychological part, the interview part. I mean, they were top notch back then in 86, 87, man, I could go back and watch that all night. Guys, thank you so much, Mr. Sigmund. Like I said, good luck to you, and thank you for being on the show. Guys, that's Matt Sigmund from the Heat Seekers.